Imagine a world where lizards more than 7 metres long sun themselves on your driveway. Birds more than 2 metres tall swooped you. I know if you've been attacked by a Maggie, they seemed about that big, but they weren't, trust me. And imagine a wombat as big as a car. Can you visualise that? And they were found roaming around your local bushland. It's hard to believe, but these are just a few examples of the megafauna that were once found in Australia. They became extinct, of course, and that was about 42,000 years ago. And now researchers have found that the role of people and climate change may have played a part. Seems amazing that even back then, humans could wield such a strong influence over the environment. To tell us more, Dr. Frederick Soltre is a research fellow and coordinator of the Global Ecology Lab at Flinders University. He's also the lead author of this research and joins us on the program this afternoon. Dr. Soltre, g'day. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Excellent, thanks. So what have you found out, and how much of this knowledge has been known, and you've kind of been putting the jigsaw puzzle together?
I mean, the megafauna extinction has been debated for decades now. I mean, for about the last 20,000-30,000 years, people are talking about megafauna extinction. But the problem we had is, in Australia, it was very difficult to have the data to estimate this cause of extinction. And until recently, we've been able to develop new tools that allow us now to map the timing of extinction for megafauna across region and to have better timing of these events. And by reconstructing this chronology, we can now have a better understanding on what happened.
Okay, so how did the megafauna die out?
So there were different hypotheses so far. The first one was probably due to climate change because of aridity in Australia. The other hypothesis was mostly due to the human that arrived in Australia and started hunting the megafauna. And there is a third hypothesis that probably the most, let's say, in between, that involves climate change and human at the same time. But everything depends on scale, actually. If you look at the continental scale, well, it's very hard to disentangle the climatic effect and the human effect. But as soon as you look at the regional scale, like we did in this study, see, the picture starts to be a bit clearer. And depending on the region where you are, the climate change is different, and the human pressure is different too. And we found out that about in southeastern Australia, for example, 80% of the area, 80% of southeastern Australia, was mostly driven by both human and climate change, actually.
Okay, so what do you think the Aboriginal people will make of this? Because they're very proud, of course, of their close association with the land and the way they've nurtured their own lands for the benefit of everybody. Is that not true? Were they reckless in any way?
No, it's not a matter of being reckless. And they actually, it's not probably, it's not a matter of doing that on purpose on everything. It's just that sometimes it's very difficult to take into account the strength of different factors. And even if they're very careful about their land, and even if there is a part of the culture behind that, sometimes it happens that some species are more sensitive than others. So I'm not saying that here the Aboriginal people just hunting megafauna on purpose and wanted to destroy everything, just that unfortunately the combination of the very strong climate change that they're not responsible for, thus happened to provoke those extinctions.
Now, one of the points that you make in your paper is the relationship that water has with both of those things, with climate change and with people, and, of course, with the megafauna. It was kind of like a conjunction of all those forces.
Yes, the thing is, because Australia in particular is very arid. More than 75% of Australia is arid. So water sources play an important role in the ecosystem for any species, because we all need to drink. So the megafauna species and humans need to drink as well. And most of the time, these water sources play the role as a big hub for increasing encounter, because at some point, megafauna need to drink, humans need to drink, and that's probably the best location if you want to hunt species to stay around. If someone needs to want to take on, for example, like you were saying, a 2-ton wombat, for example, it's probably easier to wait for him at the water source than just running after him.
Is that human nature, Frederick, do you think? You know, we saw it with the dodo and the Galapagos, this whole concept of humans going for low-hanging fruit.
I think it's somehow some self-preservation as well. I mean, the idea of because again, it's not doing that for the purpose of killing species. It's just for autosubsistence and trying to live and feed family and everything. So I guess that we try to probably go for the safest way to do it,
yeah,
for example.
I just wonder whether there was any data, if we go back 40,000 years and you've got an indigenous mob who are tracking native wildlife and they go, there wasn't as many here as there was this time last year or whatever. It's very difficult, I suppose, when you're living hand to mouth to make those kinds of scientific decisions.
Yeah, no, it's very difficult. And all our findings are just indirect evidence, actually. We never found those kind of evidence, and mostly in Australia, because it's really hard to preserve the data set. So that's why it's been so hard so far to have a clear answer and see this clear signal of the climate change and humans so far, because the data set is so poor that we need to come up with very powerful modeling tool to do that.
Yeah, okay. No, it's very interesting stuff. And just one final point. Is there any correlation there between what you've discovered and the current climate change debate, do you think?
I think it's very important, because mostly in the term of climate change now, to see, like you were saying in the introduction, that for a long time already we have this interaction between human pressure and megafauna extinction and climate change. And to be able to understand the mechanism behind that, to apply that to the future, we need to develop models and statistical tools that we can only make sense if they've been validated in the past. So by understanding this mechanism and trying to understand the path better, we understand better the mechanism behind it, and we can make better predictions for the future.
Dr. Frederick Soltray, nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.